Hello, friends. It's time to drop the needle on another episode of Supersonic Chat. Of course, this is the music podcast full of debate, jousts, chat, experiments, all done in the name of entertainment. My name is Adrian Warhope.
And I'm Leon Leroux. Adrian, as the keeper of the questions and the crafter of the conundrums, what interesting and contrasting shapes are we going to smash and juxtapose together to create new and interesting form that we call our podcast today, my good sir?
Hey, Leon, listeners, we know there are those albums you must, you should listen to before you die. And I think you should probably prioritize those albums that you haven't heard that are much loved by your friend. And of course, when Leon discovered that I'd never heard the album Independent Worm Saloon by the Butthole Surfers.
Man, what a set of words.
and when I discovered Leon had never listened to Mothership Connection by funk legends Parliament, we set about fixing the issue. This chat is evidence of our endeavors to right these wrongs and enjoy these albums and share them with our friend who is listening to albums we love for the first time. And that's the great thing about music fandom, isn't it? The chat, the diving in, the sharing.
Yeah. And yeah, what I like about this sort of thing is that when a person who's been listening to an album for a long, long, long time gets to chat to a person who's never heard that album and has just freshly heard that album.
Yeah.
The person who's freshly heard the album might hear things that or remind the person of what it feels like to first put on this album.
Yes.
And the other person can reveal things to the fresh listener that only a long experience and long return to that album can actually reveal. And so
I think it's
that kind of freshness and that experience kind of coming together, I think will be good.
It will make a great, interesting chat. I'm really keen. I loved diving back in. Let's kick off with Mothership Connection, the album from 1975 by Parliament. Shall I do it? I'll do a little, like a one little sentence setup, but I don't want to give too much of the juice. Let's just let that come out in the in the squeeze of the chat, shall
we? Yeah, I think we've got a fair bit of juice from this one.
Think so. Look, this is the fourth album by American funk band Parliament. Came out in 1975. It's got players from James Brown's band. It's got Bootsy Collins, but it's led by the legendary George Clinton, who's like the band leader. You know, the Library of Congress added this album to the National Recording Registry of the USA in 2011, declaring that it had an enormous influence on jazz, rock, and dance music. And just look, a couple of other of the accolades. In 2012, it was ranked number 276 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time. Featured again in 2020 at number 363. And Vibe listed Mothership Connection in their essential black rock recordings list. It's been on other stuff as well, but what'd you think? What did you know? What was your preconceived ideas of Parliament and this record? And how did you go with the first listen?
Wow, that I did actually have a bit of a precursory understanding of this band because when I was at uni, fresh out of high school, an 18-year-old fella, I was paying this bloke $10 just to crash at his place, which worked out great for me because, like, I'm not catching the train and, like, he gets an extra bit of cash in his pocket. It's no skin off his nose. And, you know, we became good friends. This guy's favorite band, hands down, was Parliament.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. This dude was hella into Parliament.
Older dude or a dude our age?
He was probably about three or four years older than me, maybe 2 or 3 years older. He wasn't that much older, but he'd been living by himself for a long time at that, like since he was like 16 or something like that. So he appeared older.
Yes.
At the time though, I was like kind of a bit more in a grunge and metal and alt rock and stuff like that. So my ears just weren't broad enough. And like, I just didn't have I just didn't have the ear for it. And he was so excited for the band. I was like, cool, play me some of this stuff. But straight away, I was not on board with that band. and I was just like, no, I don't see what the big deal is. But now it's a solid 25 years later. Well, you know, thereabouts.
Yeah.
And now I'm actually ready. I've been listening to all the stuff that is the background of Parliament, all the early funk stuff like James Brown and all that stuff. But
yeah,
my first listen, I was like, oh yeah, That is tasty funk. But then, like, what stuck out first is just how it makes your body move.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to it as I was preparing the notes the notes for this podcast. And without even thinking about it, I was actually just bopping in my seat.
I'm doing it now. Yeah, I'm thinking about the song in my head. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it just, and you just, you can't not move. It's just, I tried to not move. It's basically impossible.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I noticed on my first listen or two was that there's heaps of spoken word. Said, which I assume that's George Clinton, but maybe it's not.
Yes.
And yeah, it probably, I don't know. But there's also heaps of singing and melody, you know, like, and it's the singing and the melody is repeated amongst all that spoken word. And there's the whole album kind of like, I love this, the way the whole thing starts, right? Good evening. Do not attempt to adjust your radio. There is nothing wrong. We have taken control to bring you this special show. We will return it to you as soon as you are grooving. And it's so good.
It's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
It is. It is fun. And fun is the whole tone of the whole thing.
A good evening. Do not attempt to adjust your radio. There is nothing wrong. We have taken control as to bring you this special show. We will return it to you as soon as you are grooving. A welcome to station WEFUNK, better known as We Funk, or deeper still, the Mothership Connection, home of the extraterrestrial brothers, dealers of funky music, P-Funk, Uncut Funk, The Bomb.
Like that spoken word thing just sets the tone for the whole album.
Yeah.
And the other thing I noticed straight away is that the songs are actually really repetitive. But and in my mind at first, that was a bad thing. I was like, this is kind of getting, okay, it was great at first, but now I'm kind of like somehow bored of this funk. And I was waiting for, because what was happening is I was waiting for the crescendo of the song. But basically for the whole album, it's kind of like at the same level.
Yeah, it's an ebb and flow. It's an ebb and flow, pulsing, moving groove. Yeah.
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 And I was like, I was concerned because I loved the sound, but then I was also kind of feeling like it was getting tedious. I was like, oh, I want to like this, but I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
But then I gave it some more listens and I started hearing it in different contexts and I started to realize that actually I was engaging with it wrong. When I sit and listen to music, like when I sit and listen to music, you know, when I want to do a deep dive, I'm actively trying to appreciate the music and focusing on it with my whole mind and looking for details.
Evaluating it. Yeah, yes.
And so I'm engaging with my mind. I'm trying to engage with my emotions as well. But then I played it while I'm cooking dinner. Yeah. I played it in a classroom full of kids that I was teaching to make art. I was playing it in the lunchroom at work.
Yeah, come
on. This is exactly right. This is not, this is not music for like a solitary thinking kind of a listener.
No.
It's party music and it's so.
It's not an
music.
Intellectual exercise.
No.
It's not.
Absolutely not. No, no, no. And it like, it brings people together because the funk is so infectious.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, people just like, people are like bopping in the lunchroom, you know? It's rad.
Yeah. Yeah. That, it's great.
Yeah. And that was the bit where I started to actually appreciate the repetitious nature of it, you know what I mean?
Mm. Like, yeah, it's like dance music. It's a good time. It's like,
yes.
You think about dance music now, that some dance music does crescendo, but some dance music just hits a level and just continues on relentlessly.
Yeah.
This has a little ebb and flow, but it is party music. It's good time.
Totally.
It's energy and fun. It's a celebration. It's over the top. It's very over the top with its skits and its spoken word music and its what's the concept is we're landing from outer space from the chocolate Milky Way to bring you the funk, you know, to make the world groovy.
It's like aliens coming down to bring you funk because there's no funk in the world and funk is gonna save the world.
It's exactly.
Awesome.
You know,
it's awesome.
It's brilliant. And I love that you made that distinction because It isn't intellectually stimulating virtuoso music, no. Although there is a lot of talent here. But yeah. it is just a good time. It is really good.
Exactly. Like with that intellectual pressure thing, it's like pretty obvious even just from the titles of the songs, like super groovalistic prosfunkification, or give up the funk, tear the roof off the sucker, or night of the thumpasaurus peoples.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I think it's fun.
It's fun. And some of the lyrics, there is not a lot of lyrics. You're right. They're repetitive. Like, you know, make my funk the P-funk. We want to get funked up. Like, they just repeat that. It's brilliant. Yeah. You know,
it is actually.
It's kind of like funk. And I think this is where they took the James Brown, you know, hard funk of the late 60s, early 70s and made this kind of psychedelic kind of Afro-futuristic funk where it's like it's pretty laid back, but funk is a lifestyle, you know.
Totally.
It's full of jive talk and there's ghetto slang.
Uh-huh.
It's like the outer space. He also says – and I haven't researched this, but he does say, you know, where it's home of the P-Funk. So Parliament and Funkadelic was the other band. So P-Funk became this label of what they do was P-Funk. You know, we're home of the P-Funk. And he kept saying the bomb, the bomb. And I wondered if, you know how people go, oh, that is the bomb, like slang these days is if something's awesome, it's the bomb.
Yeah,
I wondered if the genesis of that is in P-Funk, in this funk development.
So.
I don't know.
I hope so. Well, when you're saying that it's kind of psychedelic, to me, I actually thought to myself that this is kind of like the funk equivalent of krautrock or psychedelic rock.
Yeah.
Because it's hypnotic, it's, you know, and the changes and shifts happen slowly to the point where you don't even realize they're happening.
Yeah. I did love the fact at one point they say to put your herd on the speaker and that the funk can heal you. It can be a remover, not just a mover. It can not just move you, but it can remove like pain and suffering.
Yeah, like a religious
heal the world.
Like a religious thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I know.
You get healing just by putting your body part on the speaker.
On the speaker and let the funk remove the pain. It's like, testify, brother. The P-Funk
so
is
good.
Here. Yeah,
it's
so
good.
And I know live they had a lot of color and glitter and costumes and there was a spaceship on the stage and all this kind of stuff. It was
I had a pretty clear image of what this band looked like because my mate was showing me those record covers like back in the day. And so I actually looked up some live shows because I bet you this would be pretty amazing live because I'd already knew about their flamboyant outfits and their massive hats and all the color that they used.
Yes.
And like, I mean, their costumes, like, it doesn't get much more out there. And they're really playing up to this intergalactic space theme. And like when you think about it, it makes sense because the space race was at its height in 1975, you know?
Yeah.
They were doing lunar rovers and they'd been to the moon a few times. And like people were thinking, okay, this is the future.
For sure.
You know, and then it was kind of actually kind of shortly after that that the space race kind of dwindled a little bit. But like the whole show opened with like a massive spotlit eyeball and light was shuttering up and down to make it look like it's blinking. And there's like a sci-fi narration, kind of like how the album starts, but designed for the live scene. And then there's this big music build-up and this dude in a fluffy sombrero and kind of like a colorful tentacle outfit bursts out the most rockin' bustin' solo you can think of before a dude dressed in a baby's nappy starts to sing this most beautiful soul. And it seems like every member of the band can actually sing extremely well as being incredible musicians. And so when Diaper Man starts busting out his own solos, he puts a dummy in his mouth, a pacifier for if you're an American listener.
Yeah.
And he's just as good a musician as Sombrero Guy. And then like George Clinton comes out later and he's got this alien looking character called Dr. Funkenstein.
Yes.
And
yeah.
But then he's got like a totally different way of singing. And like looking at these guys do this stuff, they're amazing musicians.
They are. And I think George Clinton kind of had a rotating cast. Like I think there was lots of different musicians over the many years and many functions and facets and iterations of Parliament and Funkadelic and his whole movement. So he would get the best. Look, for me, there was the bass player on this album is a guy called Bootsy Collins, who is very funky, very cool. And you know, in my formative years, I played bass and enjoyed bands like Primus and Chili Peppers and that funk rock arm. And as you work your way back through the ancestry tree of funky bass players, you will 100% stumble across Bootsy Collins. And that was my introduction to the band, was looking for funk, bass riffs, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it was different. It's definitely different. And, you know, segue or the next thing, which is really interesting to talk about, is that you can hear in this album the building blocks of what comes in the future. So there's this P-funk, and immediately I know that the G-funk era of Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre and hip-hop, which was massive in the late 90s, early 2000s, they had their whole thing called the G-funk, gangster funk, right. G-funk era, they called it, was built on samples from the P-funk era.
That is so interesting you say that, because I wrote down that this feels like a bridge between James Brown-style funk, and it feels like a bridge between that and hip-hop.
Yeah,
because
yes.
What was striking me is the spoken elements in there, and I'm not sure because I haven't done the research, but it feels like that's the, you know, the roots
the
of
genesis
hip-hop.
Of
yeah. Yeah, and then MCing also, like you were rapping. Saying, yeah. Yeah, and you were saying before, like the that kind of street speak that they're using as well.
Yeah.
Is kind of, I reckon that must have been really new to use that kind of normal everyday kind of speak in music.
Yeah, in mainstream successful music. I think Tear the Roof Off the Sucker was like a top Billboard charting single. The album was either gold or platinum selling, and they had gold and platinum selling singles. Like, so this is a mainstream successful American album,
yeah,
and really put African American culture to the fore.
Which was
kind of really important at the time.
Yeah, and I sort of felt that connection between James Brown. Like, I mean, obviously the James Brown connection is pretty obvious. They keep saying things like
"The Godfather of Funk."
Ain't it funky now?
Yeah,
you know, they keep saying things like that, deliberately referencing James Brown. But then, to me, it really felt like it was like proto rap in a way.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And the James Brown funk is hard funk, you know, like it really hits hard, and it's really driven and it's strong. And this is a little bit more laid back funk. It's a little bit more party funk, and they take it in that direction. And then hip hop picks up on the sample. So Dr. Dre samples two of these tracks on his album, The Chronic, which was in the 90s and is a huge hip hop. I'm not a massive hip hop guy, but there's albums that you know, right?
Yes.
And yeah, this is the building blocks of hip hop. Really important.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, on that live show as well, like you mentioned, there's that they built like a big spaceship.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And like a prop?
Yes. It's a huge looking spaceship, and it's got like four mirror balls like all around it, like satellite dishes or whatever. Yes. And it's like, it just sort of gets craned up and over the audience, and it's shooting sparks and smoke. And it looks like it's been going straight over the top of the audience. And then it lands on stage and like out steps this dude in a huge white fur coat and a massive matching white fur hat and a white fur cane with his long flowing hair and oversized sunglasses. And he looks somewhere like halfway between a pimp and an alien.
Yep. Yes.
And
it's space pimp.
It is amazing. I reckon that live show would have been incredible. And the other thing as well is there's so many musicians on stage, and they are all just bringing it. All of them. There's backup singers, there's trumpet, sax, trombone, George Clinton strutting around and owning the stage, guitarists everywhere, and it is so tight and unbelievable. Like, it would be such a show.
That would be a show. Yeah, what a time. What a moment. Incredible. Love Parliament. Any final thoughts on Parliament? I'm so glad that you enjoyed it.
It was fun.
I'm so glad you found the heart of it. It's fun. It's a little bit silly. It's a movement and a lifestyle and not a intellectual exercise.
I liked it because it was a concept album. Like, I love concept albums.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about this kind of funk being brought from a higher power kind of thing. yeah, to Funk Will Save Us All, and it's kind of weaving in space and stuff like that. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and it was good just to finally realize that and to just go, oh, okay, this is all for fun. This is great.
And what I love, oh yeah, go.
No, it's like it doesn't give those massive crescendo highs. No. But it keeps you at that slightly heightened level and gets your body moving start to finish. And yeah, it's something I'm definitely going to look for in the future at a party, and I'm going to chuck it on at parties and stuff like that. But it's not going to be something that I'll kind of put on when I'm really wanting like an intense solo listen. It's something that I'm going to put on in the company of people.
Yeah, I'm not a born again believer in the power of the funk, and I'm going to like, you know, ascribe to the teachings of Dr. Funkenstein and the power of funk to heal you. Like, it's a time and a place and a moment, and you know, it can bring the mood when you need to bring the mood. It's one to reach for
sure. This is the other thing I realized about it. This album's nearly 50 years old, and it still sounds think about that, right? 1975.
Yep.
It's nearly 50 years old, and it still sounds really cool, really fresh, and just it's just undeniably cool and gets your body moving 50 years later. It's awesome.
It's awesome. I do enjoy the fact that it's 7 tracks, and I think the runtime is 38 minutes.
Yeah.
So it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Totally.
On the converse of that, the Butthole Surfers album, Independent Worm Saloon, is over 1 hour runtime and 17 tracks. So thank you for that, Leon.
Well, like I said, like if you really want to get a handle on it, you can listen to maybe track 12 and then you got a handle on it. But then you miss the vomiting song later on as well. So that
look. Be very- set up the Butthole Surfers. This album's from 1993, but like, why have you recommended that I must listen to the Butthole Surfers album, Independent Worm Saloon?
Well, the Butthole Surfers have actually been going for a very, very long time, since like the early 80s, like 1983 or 1984 or something like that. I think they've been going since 82, but then their first album was like 84 or something like that. And this album, it didn't come out till like nearly 10 years later. And so they've got lots of other albums that you could have got into before that, like Hairway to Steven or Locust Abortion Technician and things like that. Those albums are really interesting, but this is kind of, I would say their first more palatable, but still experimental release that kind of led to their more widespread success. And it's albums like this that are similar to this that kind of inspired a whole lot of other people, like grunge musicians people of the 90s that we really are into, and the roots, I think, of that sound that we were really into in the 90s is really owes it to people like the Butthole Surfers and Sonic Youth and people like that. And so I guess it's like the roots of the things we love, and that's why I kind of pointed you in that direction.
I can see this is an important building block in alternative rock and punk movement. Yeah. So look, I knew the Butthole Surfers only from their massive breakout hit that was a smash on Triple J in Australia and Pepper. Was on the Hottest 100, which was called Pepper, which was a killer track.
It was. In a better shot, got him in the head. They were all in love with dying. They were drinking from a fountain that was pouring like an avalanche coming down the mountain. I don't mind the sun sometimes, the images it shows. I can taste you on my lips and smell you in my clothes. Really, really great track. Fun, silly, interesting, you know, had a drive.
It was kind of
not representative of everything the Butthole Surfers do, though. And this album is.
It is not. And I hadn't listened to the album that Pepper was from called Electric Larryland before. That came out in 1996.
Yeah.
So all I knew of Butthole Surfers was, one, the song Pepper, big success, which, as you said, is not representative of all that has come before.
Yeah.
And two, I knew that they were the band that had these legendary incredible live shows that would descend into chaos of blood and feces and a sort of hedonism, and just was just violent and energy all rolled into one. So legendary shows I'd read about. So I was keen to dive in to the 1 hour, 17 track album. And what I would say,
for every two listens I'm giving to Parliament, you're giving one listen to the Bottle Service.
Correct. But what I would say, I listened to this album through start to finish probably three times, and then dived in and out from it a bunch.
Yeah. That's now, a good way of doing it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. What I would say is that this album, that hidden within the 17 tracks on this album, is an absolutely incredible 10-song album somewhere in there.
That's true.
But
they love to experiment.
That would be too easy and too normcore for a band, especially with a band like the name, the Butthole Surfers. You know, they're the kind of band I can see that laugh about the fact that they end this album with an unlistenable 9-minute track made mostly of industrial sounds, a man violently vomiting, then being scolded to clean it up, and then just more noise. And then, of course, as they're laughing about that, the fact that they have an unlistenable 9-minute album, they then say, oh, and of course, the track before it is a 6-minute indulgently odd banjo bluegrass song as well. So this is the joy of the Butthole Surfers.
Yeah, totally.
I found them noisy, rebellious, humorous, hedonistic, heavy, alternative. Yeah. It rang true for me. Like, I heard a lot of bands like Dead Kennedys, Holiday in Cambodia, of course, Ministry, Melvins, a little bit of Melvins, Jane's Addiction and REM as well. And that was kind of like, they're kind of my immediate thoughts.
Yeah.
There are songs on here I absolutely loved. There are songs on here I absolutely hated. And there are songs on here that were somewhere in the middle. And I think it is an excellent thing. I think this was, I got a lot of time for Butthole Surfers. One, their name's incredible.
Yeah, totally.
Two, I love the lead singer Gibby Haynes's voice. It's a little bit.
Oh, isn't it great?
Haunting. It's like, it's kind of a haunting voice. It's got some vibrato and some sadness, but some, you know, devilish flair in there as well.
And there's like there's a sort of an everydayness to his voice too.
Yeah, which was cool. And then I do want to talk about the guitar playing as well, which some of it was just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, like in Dog Inside Your Body, that sort of
kinda. That's what they're all
those
pretty
chunky
straight
riff sort punk, of bass
hard
ones.
Rock chunky riff. Yeah, I'll talk about Dust Devil, which I thought was a
standout,
as well. The album starts with "Who Was in My Room Last Night," and it
that's a great song.
What are those noises at the start? Like someone, I'm flying.
Yeah,
I'm flying.
Flying
strange.
Away.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, this is probably what I expected. And then bang, it's in,
and it comes in. Yeah,
it just kicks you in the bollocks. It's so good.
Yeah.
That is a killer song. Like, the riffage, the solos, it's Melvins meets Ministry. It's like grungy, sludgy, hard rock.
Totally.
With a tinge of weirdness. Yeah. And I found out that when I was looking on YouTube that Flea features in the official film clip as the bartender. There's a
that I did not know.
There you go. Especially when Beavis and Butthead are in an episode watching that clip. And they're like, the Butthole Surfers rule. And they're like, Flea rules. And it was really good.
So, cool.
And I thought, okay, it's going to be noisy. It's going to be hard driving. Of course, The Wooden Song, song two, is softer, cleaner.
Yeah.
It's acoustic guitar.
And you can almost hear Pepper.
It's beautiful.
Like the roots of that song, Pepper, in that song. That's, I think, the closest that album comes to that song that everyone knows.
You can see there's talent. And
songwriting talent, yeah.
Songwriting talent. I saw a clip of them playing this on MTV, just the lead singer Gibby and the guitar player. And the lead singer Gibby is sitting there in a, like, everyday businessman suit with sunglasses on, not moving, and he just sings his beautiful song. The guitar player is playing an acoustic song, and he starts making faces and screaming and laughing and doing weird stuff. And you kind of go, okay, they just can't help themselves.
Yes.
By being provocative and weird and alternative.
But, I mean, it's like Parliament doesn't take itself too seriously, but also just don't take themselves too seriously either. They actually, I think, rail against seriousness, being too serious.
Oh, and that is the joy of the 90s, where alternative rock made it into the mainstream and had an impact. And I'm sort of laboring on the first couple of songs because I think they are so strong. Tongue is the third one, and it was a weird joint. It's immediate. It's likable. And it gave me real Jane's Addiction vibes in the music. But then
I see that. There's,
then it has the weird kind of jammy interlude bits that kind of are jarring as well. And then goes back to the Jane's Addiction style. I don't want to call it a verse, whatever it is. And I think at the end of it, there is the sound of a man peeing on the ground. I'm not sure. But it
could be that.
There's something going on. It was excellent.
There's a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of secret in jokes right throughout this whole album.
For sure. Then they start with some skits, and there's some weird skits, and then there's Goofy's Concern is like a real Ministry type punk song, Dead Kennedy song. And then it kind of falls into a shambles of weirdness and punk rock, where, you know, there's some alcohol's a real just rambling, shambling, shouty kind of song. And Goofy's Concern.
It's fairly structureless, that one. It sounds a bit like something that they kind of made up while they were all hung over together and just popped it on the album. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Goofy's Concern is, you know, that it's just straight and it's just that punk ethos of like, I don't give a fuck about the CIA.
All of that. That's
like,
a great one.
Yeah, I get it. Oh, it was okay. I liked Dog Inside Your Body. It was slightly weird hard rock with the weird effect on the voice.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there was some one-dimensional stuff where it's just stand and deliver sort of punk stuff. And I was like, yeah, okay. And this is where you're like over 17 tracks, pare it down, and you will have a 10-track absolute incredible album. But Butthole Surfers aren't that normcore, like I said. The annoying song, they put that what is going on?
Called it the annoying song. It's meant to be annoying. Right?
Of course, which is a great, they just dial up the crazy, they dial up the weird.
They just put a pitch shifter on his voice and it's hilarious. And it's just repetitive. It's just like the same same verse and chorus over and over again, like four times.
I called it like the Crazy Frog vocal. Remember that Crazy Frog?
Yeah, that's what it is.
But it's kind of anthemic. Like, I didn't mind the weirdness of it and the annoyingness.
Yeah, I never skip it. It's good.
I would rather skip like some of those ones before it was like, really? They're kind of just one-dimensional ideas. Yeah, like some of them were just a bit too straight. And I was like the good songs. But again, when I'm looking at a 17-track album, I'm going, oh, God, I'm sitting through this again kind of thing, you know, in the best way. Some of them I was like, okay, I could take or leave some of them. That's all. So really strong, maybe one or two I'd take or leave. But then I got to Dust Devil, and unfortunately – because I was sort of, that's track 13 and it was, the album was really long. And it comes after the annoying song. Dust Devil's a 6-minute track. So I could see that it was a 6-minute track. So at this point, I'd kind of started skipping through to listen to stuff at the beginning. Because then it goes to Leave Me Alone, Unnecessary Noise. Edgar, 3/4 time, Unnecessary Noise. More noise than ideas. Track 16, The Ballad of Naked Man. Is Naked Man like a superhero, like Superman? Man.
I don't know.
Weird song, 6 minutes of banjo and bluegrass. I'm like... There's falsetto backing vocals. There's weird affected. I'm like, why? This is indulgent. And then the unlistenable 9 minutes of Clean It Up, which is like the worst secret song of all time, of the man vomiting and all of that. So
it's really gross, isn't it? But
it's horrendous. So,
what that Dust Devil song's great with its guitar sound and stuff like that. It's awesome.
I then came back to Dust Devil and I said, no, you must listen to this start to finish. And it's one of the standout tracks of the album.
Yeah,
so I love
really
the first
great.
Three and I love Dust Devil. 6 minutes, 2.5 minutes of song and then 3 or 4 minutes of incredible guitar playing.
Yeah.
Like the song hits just hard. Really it's got solid ideas.
Soloing.
Oh, it's so good. Like I said, it got obscured amongst these kind of, well, I call them mediocre and unnecessary tracks at the end. But what I would say is that
they're playful. They're all playful.
Yeah.
You think they're just not curated?
Not curated. Yeah, like unnecessary. Like I said, some of them were unlistenable. And just I blame CDs for being able to fit long. Like they went, you know, let's just have an idea and let's just put these songs on. Like, you know. But Dust Devil, the 4-minute outro is some of the best, like, alt punk guitar playing you'll hear, especially when the drums fade at the end and it's just, I wish I knew the guy's name. We're just left with him playing. The guitar playing, the sounds are incredible. It's wild, fevered, frenetic, urgent guitar playing, and the sounds that he squeezes out, it's like a wizard conjuring spells. So good. I just thought Dust Devil was just a great track. Really good.
The guitarist's name's Paul Leary.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like just him and Gibby Haynes are the only two that have like really kind of been the Butthole Surfers all the way through.
Right. It makes sense. It would be an interesting band room of, I'm sure they love to party and, you know, I'm sure drugs and alcohol and
Sure.
So,
but yeah, I saw them live, but at a secret show.
Wow.
At the Annandale, they weren't going by the name Butthole Surfers. They were just, they called themselves like an early name of theirs. So like if you knew, like, cause you know, they used to change names early on.
Fans would know.
And so, it was a really cool show. And they were very, very experimental and there was lots of effects going through the vocals the whole time.
Okay.
And most of the songs that they, well, actually probably half the songs there, I didn't know what the songs were. They might have.
All right.
Yeah, they might have been from early stuff that I hadn't heard at the time, or maybe they were songs that they'd been making up or jamming with or something. But
they look like they've got a vast catalog.
They do.
What I would say is that I'm so happy that I have a handle on the Butthole Surfers. I'm so happy and glad that I listened to this album, that you introduced me to this record. Some of the tracks on here are standout, incredible examples, like hands down stellar examples of 90s alternative rock.
Yeah, totally.
Movement. Some of it. And I do love the fact that they've got stuff on here that I found unlistenable. It's experimental.
Yeah.
It's weird. I love the name Independent Worm Saloon. I have no idea what it is. I like the album art. I just, you know, there's a lot to like about Butthole Surfers.
Yeah, well, I didn't, when I recommended it to you, I didn't think it'd be like, oh, this is going to be Adrian's new passion that he's got to go out and listen to all their stuff. But I think it's just like essential key moments in the history of our taste.
I'm so glad that's a great way to frame it. Essential moments in the history of our taste, which is, you know, come up in the 90s. So that real alternative rock movement of the 90s. Like, these guys were awesome. Just one interesting. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which, of course, I knew, you know, I could just see loving a lot of the noise and experimental aspects of this band, for sure. I did, because I hadn't thought of the band. I thought of Melvins straight away, and I hadn't thought of the band Ministry for a long time. You know, Al Jorgensen's band Ministry. I loved that album called Psalm 69.
Yeah,
Had Just One Fix on it, and NWO. And, of course, it has the track on it, Jesus Built My Hot Rod.
Yes.
And did you know, I only found this out today as I dived through the rabbit hole of Melvins and Ministry and was just loving listening to Butthole Surfers and going down this rabbit hole. Gibby Haynes, lead singer of Butthole Surfers, is the vocalist, the guest vocalist on Jesus Built My Hot Rod on Ministry.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah,
that does. Oh, that, now that you say it, that yes, that is his sound. That is his voice. I just thought it was Al just doing a different affectation, but it's Gibby.
He's highly treated. The voice is highly treated, but yeah. What a great weird song. So there you go. I enjoyed that. But thank you for introducing me.
That's great. And I figured that there'd be some songs that you just weren't into, but I think picking out those ones that just really typify what the Butthole Surfers are all about, I think that's where you'd be enjoying it, and I'm glad you did.
Yeah, it was very, very good. You got a fact of the week?
Well, I've got two, actually.
Oh, yeah.
The singer, you know, Gibby Haynes, his dad's name is Jerry Haynes, and he was a host of a popular children's TV show, and he called himself Mr. Peppermint. And he wore like a red and white striped outfit, and he looks to be a very, very wholesome fellow.
Okay.
And here's a second fact for you. You know John Paul Jones?
Yes.
Bassist of Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin, yes.
He produced Independent Worm Saloon.
An incredible fact. I did read and learn that, and I was like, what the hell. This is a major label release. So they'd been on indie album labels, record labels, and this came out on Capitol. So this wasn't a major, obviously, with the birth of Nirvana, that alternative rock was big and every major label was trying to sign these kind of bands.
Counter to everybody's instincts, these guys were actually selling upwards of 100,000 records when they were quite independent, and everyone else was just going, why is everybody buying these records? We don't understand it. Fine, we'll sign them.
Love it.
Yeah, and this is their first album, I think, with a major label.
It is.
And it was because they were selling lots of records, despite nobody in those executive positions understanding it, they were still selling.
Yeah. I love it. Let's just not bury the lead there that John Paul Jones produced this album. Like, wild. That is wild to me.
It is.
Absolutely.
And he heard Clean It Up and went, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, we'll just fine tune that vomit sound. Love it.
We got to really get the splatter sound.
Oh, gosh. There you go. Far out. Listeners, have you heard Butthole Surfers? Have you heard Parliament? Let us know what you thought. What's an album that you love that you're dying to introduce your mate to? Get on it. It's a great adventure. Good chat. Hit us up on all the socials and tell us what you thought about today's episode, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called these days. And you can send us an email at supersonicchat@gmail.com.
And thank you all for your continuing love. And those dedicated fans of the show, we love you right back. And to those new listeners, we love you too. So show us your love by telling your friend about our show or giving us a tasty 5-star rating to make our day.
Thank you, Leon. Thank you, listeners. That was another episode of season 5 of Super Sonic Chat.